Good evening, friends, and welcome to Sleepy Time Tales, a podcast intended to help you sleep. Do you find yourself lying awake at night, mind spinning and emotions in turmoil with the anxieties of 21st century life? Do you wake up in the middle of the night and find yourself not quite able to doze back off at 3 a.m? I'm here to help. My name is Dave, and I'm your narrator here to talk you into a restful night. I'm someone who has struggled to sleep ever since I was a baby. I could tell you stories about how much I used to make my parents suffer, and over time I even might. Before we go any further, I need to take care of some business. It's the sort of thing that usually happens towards the end of most podcasts, but since I'm hoping you're asleep by the time we get that far, I need to mention this stuff now. Firstly, you can find the podcast, all episodes, as well as some blog posts and musings on our website, sleepytimetales.net. Comment, questions, suggestions can all be emailed to contact@sleepytimetales.net. You can also find links to all of our various social media there, but I'll give you a few links here now. You can find us on Twitter @sleepytimetales. You can find us on Instagram @sleepytimetales, although to be honest, I'm not sure what I'm using Instagram for, but I have it anyway. You can also find us on Facebook. We're on facebook.com/sleepytimetalespod. Not Sleepy Time Tales, that's something else. We have a channel on YouTube where we will be putting simple visualizer enhanced versions of the episodes up for your enjoyment. Search for Sleepy Time Tales podcast or follow the link in the show notes. I'm of the type of family that doesn't really like to talk about money, but I would appreciate any help you, the listener, can give to help me cover hosting costs. So if you find this show helpful, please hit the donate button on the website to throw a little tip in the jar. Every dollar counts and helps and will be much appreciated if you're so inclined. Also, if you're so inclined, please rate and review the podcast on whatever your podcast delivery service of choice is. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, wherever you found this show. A 5-star review will get us in front of more people, and the more people who find us, the more people we have a chance of helping to find a good night's sleep. Now that business is taken care of, let me run through the introduction and explain exactly what this podcast, a sleep aid podcast, is for. I discovered far too late in life that droning male voices have a tendency to put me into a deep sleep. I learned this when I was listening to video game podcasts and Welcome to Night Vale at bedtime, or sometimes even during the day when I was home because I was doing shift work. Eventually I found out that sleep podcasts are a thing. I tried one out and it worked very well for me. But when I recommended it to other people, it wasn't so successful, mostly because they didn't like the guy's voice. So I wondered if I could make an alternative, and here it is. This intro will go on for a few minutes as I explain the idea behind the podcast and why I think listening to me will help you. Then after the intro, the story will begin. Before the story starts, maybe try to wind down, grab a glass of water, use the bathroom. Turn out the lights and prepare yourself for the experience of sleeping as we prepare to go on a journey together to a restful night's sleep. Or maybe it's not a journey. Maybe it's more like we're building a space for you, a mental nest to settle into. The idea is that you listen to me to help slow your mind down, but don't listen too closely. Unless you find me that fascinating, but I doubt that's going to happen. The story I will tell is going to be maybe a little bit confusing and pointless, maybe a little boring, and hopefully it creates some state of mind of peaceful resignation, maybe that's the word. Resigned acceptance of the state of mind, a lack of resistance to the arms of sleep as they reach out to you. As I said, I hope you're asleep before our planned time is up, but don't feel pressurized. It may not work on the first night. Maybe it will take a few nights for you to get used to listening to my voice. Maybe my accent is strange to you. Maybe one episode just isn't long enough. I'm going to assume here that this podcast goes undiscovered for an extended period. After all, who's going to find this in the first week? If you've discovered this, I probably have a bit of an archive for you to listen to. So try to queue up a few episodes or just run through the backlog. what I do with sleep aid podcasts that I listen to is I just let them stream all night. I lie down in the dark with my earbuds in and I let it run. Sometimes when I wake up at 3 a.m. the stream is still running and I just let the voices waft me back to sleep. Sometimes it may be disconnected and so I need to start again. Sometimes I even wake up 30 minutes before my alarm goes. Usually I carry on listening and it even knocks me right back out. Let me tell you, that 30 minutes is sometimes the most restful part of my night. There's something about allowing yourself to relax completely right before the alarm that just satisfies on a very deep level. So you have the basic idea. You relax and lie in the dark. While you do that, I tell you a tale. It might be a story I make up, like tonight's story, although that's based on a weird news story. It may be me talking about a movie or a TV show I find interesting, but probably not too interesting. I just may waffle about who knows what makes me feel. This is all new to me, so I don't want to decide yet what my rules are. If you, the listener, find some types of things work better than others, feel free to let me know through social media or the email I provided earlier. So lie there in the dark, let my voice wash over you, listen to things you find interesting, but try not to listen too closely. If you're too engaged, that may prevent you from falling asleep. I'll try my hardest not to be too interesting, which a lot of the people I know will tell you shouldn't be too hard. I do have the habit sometimes of going on and on about things I find interesting, but nobody else does. It's a great failing I have that I'm trying to turn into a benefit, especially for you, the listener. My nighttime friend who has elected to lie in the dark, listening to my voice. Thinking about it, that does seem a bit strange, doesn't it? Inviting me, a stranger from somewhere in the world, probably far away, to speak to you in your sleep. To speak you to sleep. But you'll always be safe with me. I'm here to help you relax, to improve your life in a small way, or maybe not so small. People don't sleep very well these days, and it makes their lives harder. So I'm here to do my small part to help you in a big way. To help you face tomorrow and the day after, well rested and better able to cope and process. I'm not going to tell you horror stories or ghost stories, unless maybe they're funny. You know, the rare humorous haunting. I'm not going to focus on any of the bad parts of modern life that keep us awake. I will only share stories that relax or make your life better, even in small ways. I believe very strongly in the benefits of kindness. I want to be kind to you. I want to share kindness with you. I want you to be kind to yourself. Don't beat yourself up or rebuke yourself over not sleeping. Don't get tense if you just can't get yourself over the edge of sleep, even with me here in your ears trying to help. Forgive yourself. And if I don't seem to be helping, I ask that you forgive me, because that won't help you. Take a breath, forgive the fact that you can't sleep, and let my voice wash over and under you. Take another breath. Imagine the warm darkness rising up, inviting you to sleep and to a better life starting tomorrow. And if you can't let go, forgive yourself and try again tomorrow. If you've had a life of insomnia, sleep is something like an enemy. But it's not your enemy. It is a natural process that we have been pulled away from by stress and life and supposed progress shining lights in our eyes at all hours. I'm here to work with you, to create a safe space, a cocoon in which you can curl up and allow nature to take its course. So if you're still with me, thank you for staying. If you're already asleep, we'll chat again soon. And of course you aren't hearing me except maybe in a dream. So let your dreams be about the story that I'm about to tell you now. This story is inspired by a recent news story of a North Carolina toddler who went missing for 3 days. Search parties combed the woods near his house and found no sign of the little boy, but he was heard calling from the woods by a woman out walking her dogs who called 911. Emergency services came out and they found him less than a mile from his home. The child was wet and cold but in good spirits, and he told his mom that he had spent the time hanging out with a bear. There was no sign of a bear near where he was found, although black bears are endemic to the area, so it is possible that he did encounter one. The sheriff has said that they don't know anything about the nature of the hanging out the boy did, but have chosen not to dispute the toddler's version of events. While toddlers may not understand everything about the world around them, in my experience they tend to be honest, so I don't see a reason to argue with him either. Like the sheriff, I choose to accept the fact that the child came home to his family, and whatever the exact details of his time in the woods, what matters is he got home and he was protected. So inspired by the story, I have started to form the idea of a story series about a young boy who wanders into the woods near his house and has encounters with the denizens of the forest. These won't be scary stories, after all this is Sleepy Time Tales, and I'm trying to help you sleep, not keep you awake. I don't like child in peril stories at the best of times, so I won't inflict you, my dear listener, with them. This story is about a young boy, filled with joy and delight, and a world that returns that joy and delight to him. And so we begin. Chapter 1, Buddy and the Bear. It can be hard to know the mind of a small child. A person with drives and motivations and personality, yet who cannot fully express these things yet. Who can speak in broad terms, who can point and say puppy or say I'm hungry, but doesn't have the vocabulary to express to adult understanding what they think or feel. I've always liked to watch my daughter as she goes through life, experiencing and processing everything that is brand new to her, coming to an understanding of life based on her limited previous knowledge and her shifting and growing grasp of language. This often unknowable and inscrutable aspect of the really young child makes them mysteries despite their apparent simple motivations. For this reason, we don't know why it occurred to Buddy to slip out of his garden, where he played with his sisters, to go exploring. He was too young to be afraid, to know better, but old enough that his curiosity drew him to the dappled shadows. Maybe he saw something that interested him, that called to him. Maybe he was just curious to see what was hidden on the other side of the fence. What was hidden beneath the trees. By the time he's old enough to tell us, he probably won't remember, so we may never know. But maybe that's okay. As long as a story has a happy ending, maybe a bit of a mystery is a good thing. It's better, I believe, to accept that sometimes we don't get answers to all of our questions. And this story has a happy ending, dear friend. I'll tell you right now that Buddy returns home before his mother or father or sister start to worry. I'm telling you this because I don't want you to worry. I always worry about the children in stories. I don't like to see them in danger, and I never did. So let me assure you now that tonight Buddy returns home to his warm dinner, a bath and bed. And any time you meet Buddy again in the future, this will be the case. But let's move on to tonight's story. Let's move on to the first time that Buddy, called by and some inscrutable siren song, decided to slip through the fence around his parents' yard and wander into the trees. The fence was a split post fence, the top with widespread uprights and just two horizontal planks, intended to keep out large animals, but not sufficient for the determination and ingenuity, of the mind of a toddler, which, while inexperienced, can be an expression of pure will. What a child wills, they will make happen, as long as they have the physical capacity and there isn't an authority figure around to prevent it. The bottom board of the fence was down low to prevent easily crawling through, but Buddy was a strong boy. So instead of going under, he carefully clambered over, his feet slipping a few times, but it wasn't much of a challenge to him. He spent a lot of time in his daycare climbing ladders and tires, so this minor fence was no challenge. So he scrambled over the board and dropped down into the long grass on the far side. I think he was following a butterfly. I mean, we don't know why, but I'm going to go with this theory. I think he was following a butterfly, a beautiful monarch that had drifted through the yard, across his eyeline, and then out into the shadowed forest. He wanted to keep an eye on it, so Buddy followed it to see where it went. The forest was thick around his house, so he lost sight of his house and yard quite quickly, but he didn't worry. He knew that nothing in this world would give him a reason to fear. He wandered away from the house, following the drifting, relaxed flight of the beautiful butterfly as it dipped and swooped like an autumn leaf on the breeze, which had just a little bit more purpose. Driven by some urge more profound than a mere movement of the air. Maybe the butterfly was looking for water, or maybe nectar or a mate. Insect minds are even less knowable than toddler minds, their instincts even more inscrutable. Butterflies, as we know, start life as caterpillars. The monarch is a stripy, fat caterpillar, green and black. The instinct of the insects, the drive of nature, drives it to turn itself into a pupa and a chrysalis that then becomes the black and orange and amber creature we know as the monarch, or some call a milkweed butterfly. Once it emerges from the chrysalis, it's driven to feed and mate, to reproduce and then die and leave space for a new generation. So this monarch was doing that, driven by its instincts to feed and reproduce, and in the trail of this insect instinct, followed Buddy. Trying to keep an eye on it, but he was also trying not to fall too often as he tripped over branches and rocks. He never really hurt himself much because he never fell far, and nature makes three-year-olds resistant to falls. They are tough and flexible within most limits. They don't often hurt themselves much unless adults fail to keep an eye on them and keep those instincts for getting themselves into situations in check. There was no one in Buddy's yard back home to keep his instinct to follow the butterfly in check. But as I've already said, and I guess this is a spoiler of sorts, he'll get home safe and sound. Without any injuries, except maybe some of the minor bumps and scrapes that toddlers usually have after an afternoon in the yard. Those signs that are the sign of a child learning their physical limits and stretching and learning. After a while, Buddy lost sight of the drifting, swooping butterfly, who continued on to live the rest of its short life. Who knows what became of the butterfly? But I like to think that after leading Buddy on the path of his first adventure, it had a happy life. Buddy lost sight of the butterfly in the light and shadows. It's the sort of environment for which the monarch was perfectly evolved. It was practically made to disappear into the dappled shade and patches of sunlight. Buddy was sad for a short while. His little flying friend had flown away from him, or so he felt. He was at the side of a shallow stream and started to watch the water. The warm sun and cool breeze soothed his mind. Maybe he even dozed off a little, a bit tired after his long walk, and he was listening to the bubbling, babbling stream of water, which is something that does help a lot of people to sleep. After a while, he looked up and saw the bear, a big black creature snuffling and scratching around in the forest and bushes. He stared in fascination at the creature that felt like it was hundreds of times bigger than he was, yet looked so soft he just wanted to touch it. He stood up slowly, knowing somehow, even at his very young age, that he shouldn't startle the creature. Maybe it isn't a mystery how he knew. He had pets at home, a couple of dogs and a cat, and he knew that if he wanted to touch them, he would need to move gently. If he yelled and ran at them, the dogs would run away, and the cat would run up and hide on the top of the curtain rail. He didn't want to startle the giant creature, this bear with fur that looked like one of the dogs, the fur that he wanted to touch so badly. I've never seen a bear in real life, at least I don't think so. I've been to the zoo, but I don't remember seeing bears in any that I've been to. They look really soft, and their fur looks really deep. Like you could just disappear into it. I guess that's why bear skin rugs are a thing. I'm not a fan of hunting wild animals, especially for their fur, which is pretty, but probably more useful to the animal than it is to any, or most people rather. But if I could get an ethically sourced bear skin rug, I don't think I could turn it down. Anyway, back to our little buddy, Buddy. Buddy was fascinated by this fur. The fur that looked like the softest of his dogs, but so much deeper. He just wanted to cuddle with it, like he cuddled with the dogs on the couch on a cold night. So he slowly walked over, slowly, slowly over, and extended his hand. Now, I've talked a lot about unknowable minds, about how inscrutable the mind is of a toddler, and how a butterfly is really unknowable, if it even can be said to have a mind. A bear's mind is probably more like a toddler's than an insect's. It too is driven by instincts and urges to survive and thrive, but the mammalian brain is a more developed thing than the insect brain. It's probably a lot like the brain of a human toddler, without the potential to grow into true sentience. The toddler will grow up and develop reason, to learn to moderate those instincts and impulses that drive the human organism at its early days and years. So I don't know why the bear allowed Buddy to get close enough to touch, to get in very close and bury his face in the fur. Which didn't last long because, while it felt good, the bear smelled quite strongly. It was a sunny summer day, sunny and warm and humid. The air was warm and the bear had been working hard foraging for food, so it was in need of a bit of a bath. After a few minutes, Buddy stopped snuggling with the beautiful soft fur, looked the bear in the face and said, "Hello, bear." The bear, for its part, didn't give much of an answer, just gave Buddy a slightly quizzical look and made a snorting noise. Buddy took this noise to mean that the bear said hello back. Buddy was a clever boy, and he knew that bears and most animals can't speak, even if they do understand what you're saying to them. So he knew that the bear understood his bright friendly greeting and had answered as well as it could. Because of the friendly greeting from his new friend, the large black bear, Buddy decided to hang around. The bear, for its part, looked at the little human boy for a few minutes longer and decided to carry on with its day. When the bear began to wander off deeper into the forest, Buddy called out, "Wait, bear," and followed. It's possible that the bear slowed down to help Buddy's short 3-year-old legs to keep up. Maybe it did. Maybe it was just foraging really slowly. As we have said, the mind of a bear is hard to guess, except for the fact that they're always trying to survive. So the bear wandered around, apparently randomly, but never getting ahead of Buddy. It ate berries off of bushes and allowed Buddy to eat some. It lifted fallen logs and ate the termites and bugs that lived underneath it. It allowed Buddy the opportunity to try those too, but he very politely declined. He may have been a mere 3 years old, but his parents were already teaching him the benefits of please and thank you very much. While Buddy was in the company of the big black bear, he made many new friends in the woods. Skittish deer seemed to be fascinated by the odd pair of tiny boy and giant bear. Rabbits ran out of the undergrowth and examined Buddy and his buddy with surprised looks in the eyes and twitching noses. Confused at the strange smell of the boy who smelt like a boy and also like a bear, Buddy greeted each creature that came to inspect. "Hello, bunny. Hello, deer. Hello, birdie," to all the different birds that fluttered out of the high trees and thick undergrowth to see the strange sight. The bear seemed to have some instincts that worked out well for Buddy. I don't know if the bear somehow associated Buddy with his home. If he smelled like the olfactory cocktail of people, pets, and cooking that would sometimes drift through the woods. but for whatever reason, as the base grounds and foraged, eating and sharing berries, and eating offering to share grubs and termites, the bear moved through the forest in a loop rather than a straight line. It made sure, or luck would have it, I'm not sure, that it, with its new friend Buddy, got closer to Buddy's house, rather than further away. It scrounged and foraged on a long looping path, feeding its hunger and making sure Buddy didn't get too hungry, all while moving in a slow, curvy path through the trees and shadows to slowly but steadily get closer to Buddy's house and the safety of his parents. They were quite close to the house when Buddy heard his mother's voice. He heard his mother calling his name, "Buddy, Buddy." His mother had just noticed that Buddy wasn't in the yard. She thought at this point that he had just wandered around the corner to climb into the dog's kennels, which was something he liked to do. The dogs didn't like it when he did that when they were home, and they would very gently evict him if they were. But he enjoyed lying down on their blankets, and he enjoyed his mother's reaction when she found him stinking and covered in dog hair. She wouldn't be angry. She'd laugh and pat him down briskly, trying to get as much hair off as possible before taking him into the bathroom and sticking him in the tub. His mother went around the corner to the kennels, and he saw her bending over to look inside each one, trying to find him. "Buddy." She didn't shout now, because he sometimes fell asleep in the warm, doggy-smelling darkness of the kennels. He climbed through the split post fence as she looked into the last of the kennels, and he ran up behind her as she stood up, hands on her hips, a perplexed look on her face as she asked, "Now where is that boy gone?" "Mommy," he called excitedly, as he leapt at the back of her legs, grabbing on tight, nearly knocking her over in her surprise. "Buddy, where were you, silly boy?" Wandering off, then not answering when I called. "Mummy, I saw a bear." "Oh, really?" she asked excitedly. She knew there were bears in the woods, but they didn't often come near the houses during summer. There was plenty for them to eat out in the habitat. Out in their habitat. In autumn, the situation was sometimes different, as the bears got hungry and would come sniffling around many of the houses. This house had a fence that made a bear's life difficult, so they tended to move on elsewhere. There was the time a few years ago when a bear had gotten its head in Mr. Jackson's car because it smelt food and torn up the interior trying to find an empty bag of fried chicken. So Buddy's mom didn't disbelieve her imaginative son, but she thought that maybe his older sister had told him a story about bears in the woods, and thought that he had seen one in the shadows. As she picked him up and carried him into the house, she noticed the smell, almost like he had been in the kennel, but a little bit different, less pungent, yet somehow more wild. A smell that made her think, just for a second, that maybe Buddy had got closer to a bear than she'd strictly like. But he was here with her, warm and safe and badly in need of a bath, so she just put the thoughts aside and took him into the house. The story got me thinking a bit, sort of wondering what happened to the boy in the initial story of the North Carolina toddler. What could have happened? And I thought about black bears and Native American mythology, so looked up a few stories and thought I'd share some interesting ones about particularly the Cherokee and their fascination with the black bear. I've also come up short on time, so to be honest, I'm padding a little bit, but I think the stuff is interesting nonetheless. Evidence suggests that the first American people to revere the black bear were the Cherokee nations, who ranged over a wide area, but are generally agreed to originate in the Blue Ridge Smoky Mountains in the northeastern United States. While the traditional Cherokee beliefs are monotheistic, they did respect animals and nature, and they revered the black bear and the rare white example, which is known as a spirit bear. To the Cherokee, nature is a reflection of the Great Spirit, and so it should be cared for and respected. The Cherokee Nation consists of 7 clans. One of them is the Wild Potato Clan, also known as the Bear Clan. It's believed that the kinship the Wild Potato Clan felt for the bear is due to the fact that they, like the bear, were primarily foragers. The black bear is a very efficient forager, so the Wild Potato Clan felt a kinship to the bear. They even had a very similar diet of plants, nuts, berries, meat, fish, and of course, wild potatoes. The Cherokee kinship with the bear may be aided by the fact that bears share many characteristics with people. They can move around upright, they vocalize, they have very similar diets. I find it interesting that there seems to be something in humans that likes to see human-like characteristics in the animals around us. And without monkeys or any other primates in North America, the bear fulfilled that role for North American native people. The Cherokee have seen the black bear as a guide, a totem, and a friend, but while they revere the bear, it is also a resource, a source of clothing, food, and oil. Bear skulls and bones are often used as jewelry and adornment, used in ceremonies or symbols of a warrior's skill and status. There are a number of Cherokee legends around the local black bears that I'll touch on just a few here. There are a number of Cherokee legends around the local black bears that I will touch on here. Firstly, despite their name, black bears can be several colors. They were named for the preponderance of black examples first discovered by European settlers, but as they traveled west, they found there was a lot of variation in the coloration. One variation is the rare white bear. These bears are not albinos. Their coloration comes from a chromosomal mutation that gives them an actual white, grey, and slightly brown pigmentation. They don't suffer any ill effects from this, whereas albino animals often have health issues from their albinism. Sensitivity to light and diseases like cancers are common in animals without pigmentation. And I've just realized this is one of the first times I've ever said the word albinism out aloud, so I hope I've pronounced it right. These white pigmented non-albino bears are often called spirit bears. The great white bear was believed by the Cherokee to be Earthmaker's first creation. He was used as a counterweight to balance out the primeval earth, which was spinning out of control. And so for this reason, he has been given control of the earth. It is also believed that wounded bears go to him for healing. There's a Cherokee legend that tells of one clan, the Ani Jaguhi, and again, I hope I pronounced that remotely right, but the article had a phonetic pronunciation, where one of the boys of the clan kept disappearing into the forest. He would disappear all day, returning home every night and refusing to eat. Each time he returned, he was a little hairier. His parents asked him why he refused to eat, and he told them that he ate plenty and better during the day. And because, as they could see he was changing, soon he would stop returning. Eventually he shared with his clan, the Ani Jaguhi, that he had been living among the bears, who were living in plenty, unlike the people who struggled. So after a 7-day fast and informing the other clans of their plans to go into the forest to live lives of plenty, this boy's whole clan moved into the forest to join the bears. They even told their fellow Cherokee not to fear hunting them because they would live on. In fact, they offered themselves up to be food for the tribes in times of hardship, telling the people they left behind that they could sing songs and some of the people who are now bears would come to provide themselves to the hungry. Thank you very much for joining me on this first full episode of the Sleepy Time Tales podcast, the sleep aid podcast designed around a bedtime story to help you get a restful night. New episodes will be released every Sunday night to give you something fresh to help you rest in the new week. The music for tonight is Un Désert by Kumiku from the Free Music Archive. It is released on a Creative Commons 1.0 license. Check out more of their work on their website and their Patreon, which you will find linked in the show notes. Good night and sweet dreams.